Okay. Last week we had discussed Kiddush. So I have one more point I want to make about, a general point about Kiddush overall, and then we'll get more into the daytime Kiddush and ideas about Hamotzi, Lechem Mishnah, etc. There is a very, very popular and common minhag Yisrael to say L'chaim. Right? Forget Kiddush. When we drink, we say L'chaim, we make a L'chaim together, kind of like the goyim make a toast, we make a L'chaim. So where does the idea of L'chaim come from? There's a particular minhag among Sfardim, mostly, to say L'chaim at Kiddush. The Kaddish says, we'll say Savri, and they'll go L'chaim, then they went with Kiddush. So that's in Kiddush, but in particular, in general, there's a minhag to say L'chaim overall when we drink wine or other alcoholic beverages. Where does that come from? So really, this minhag has sources. The earliest sources really in the Gemara and the Medrash. So it's actually a very old minhag. The Medrash Tanchuma, it brings down in Parshas Pekudei. It speaks about, the connection to me is still a little bit mysterious, but the connection begins. It talks about people who are chayev misa and abezdin. So somebody had done an avera which would incur capital punishment. And it says that the abezdin will, they have the case, they bring in the witnesses, and then the dayanim go out to discuss what the halacha should be, if they should paskin to kill the defendant or not. It says after they go and interrogate the witnesses, so they come back in and they say to them, Savri Maranan, like we'd say Kiddush, listen up. Is what Savri means, listen up. And then the answer, Im Lachayim Lachayim, mean Lamisa Lamisa. So let's say, okay, if it's for life, then for life. If it's for death, then for death. So basically, you're at a court case, they're deciding life and death, the denim have to decide. And before they actually make a decision, there's this statement made, Savri Maranan, and there's a response of L'chaim, L'chaim, or L'misa, L'misa. If it's for life, it's for life. If it's for death, it's for death. So that's at a court. And the Medrash continues later on and says, V'chein Shliach Tzibor K'sheish B'yado Kosho Kiddush. So too, if you're a Shliach Tzibor, and you're saying Kiddush. So I'm not sure why we're connecting Kiddush to capital punishment. I can't figure that one out. I don't have a shot in that. We say, so too, a Kiddush, we have a similar process. It says the Mekadesh says Savri Maranan, and the congregation, we're talking about in Shul, they say L'chaim. Kolomar, to say ki L'chaim hei hakos. This cup should be for life. So again, I don't know the connection between Mises Bezdin and Kiddush, but the Medrash makes this idea that the in Shul at least, the Chazan says Savri Maranan, and the Tzibor responds L'chaim, meaning the kos should be for life. So that's one source for this. I think a little easier source to understand is the Gemara, Masechta Shabbos. The Gemara says that it says if you say chamra v'chayei lefum rabbanin, if you say that wine and life to the mouth of the rabbanin, to the rabbis, that's not called superstition. No, so you might think, oh, l'chayim's like superstition, like we're saying drink this cup and it'll bring you life. So Gemara says it's not an issue of darchei emori. It's not that you're not doing practices of goyim. It's not superstition. It's not a avodah zarah. It's like a bracha, sort of. We give each other brachos. We'll say to each other, you should have a great day, good Shabbos, everything should go well, refuah shleima, things like that. So l'chaim is like a bracha. And the Gemara says there was a ma'aseh with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva made a wedding for his son. And on every single cup of wine they would drink, he would say, chamra v'chayei lefum rabbanan, wine and life to the mouths of the rabbis, chayei v'chamra lefum rabbanan lefum tamidehon, life and wine to the rabbis and to their students. So this idea of chamra v'chayei, life and wine, they go together. There's some recall of l'chayim that applies to wine. So the question is, we have sources for it, but why? You can argue that, let's say, l'chaim on a cup of milk. It's a little healthier than wine, probably. More nutrition, calcium, protein. What's the idea of a l'chaim on wine? So one idea given is the Marsha. The Marsha says that when it comes to alcoholic beverages, there's a balance, because a little bit of it makes you happy and puts you in a good mood, and too much is destructive. So the bracha of l'chaim is appropriate on alcohol, because you tell the person, okay, have a drink, but it should be chias, it should be life, and shouldn't be destructive. So it's a bracha we're giving to someone drinking alcohol to be careful. That's one way to look at it. We know that Noach, he drank wine and left the teva. And at that point, Noach ended up being ridiculed in his tent. He became naked. His sons came in. So Noach brought a curse into the world because of that. Hashem went ahead and cursed Canaan, Noah cursed Canaan, right? Noah cursed Canaan. The wine brought about a klala, brought about a curse. So we don't want our wine to bring us any form of curse. So again, we exclaim l'chaim, we drink wine to make sure we don't fall into the trap of Noah. So, and that's another reason given. It's also interesting that the Gemara speaks about, this practice is not that common anymore, but the Gemara speaks about how it was a minhag of avelim to drink wine, to kind of soothe their nerves, calm them down, calm the emotions, bring them a little bit more simcha through their tragedy. So that the Gemara says, "L'nivra yain olanachem avelim," that the purpose of wine's creation was to comfort mourners. So when we drink wine, we daven, we should be drinking this out of happiness, not out of mourning. So again, it's another way to look at wine as a drink that brings us to chayim, not to mavis. And then one other explanation given is that we learned last year that one of the interpretations of what the Eitz Hadas was that it was wine. It was grapes made into wine. And we know that the biggest curse brought to the world ever was the curse that was brought when Adam and Chava ate from Eitz Hadas. And if that was wine, so when we drink wine, we say this wine should not bring a cloth, this wine should bring a bracha to the world. It should bring chayim and not death. Because Eitz Hadas brought death to the world. So all four of these things are speaking about how wine has potential to bring death, or the wine is a beverage used to soothe us from death, and therefore we wanted this wine to be a beverage of life and not a beverage of death. So this is the idea of l'chaim in general. So I think a lot of us kind of take it into like a toast, sort of, which has become sort of like the practice. But its origins seem to be more not a toast, but more a bracha. More of we're wishing the person drinking wine, this wine should be a healthy, positive, uplifting drink rather than one that causes death and destruction. So that's an interesting idea about l'chaim. Now, in terms of the minhag, to say l'chaim, so we did see the Medrash quotes it, that there is a minhag to say l'chaim at Kiddush. However, the minhag amongst most is not to, certainly Ashkenazim is not to, and there's a reason for that. The reason for that is because even if wine might be destructive, there's a concept that a mitzvah is never destructive. We say, shomer mitzvah lo yedid davar ra. If you do a mitzvah, you're not going to know anything bad. The mitzvah can't bring to bad. So if you're having Kiddush, and you're about to drink your wine, someone says, l'chaim, they're implying that maybe this mitzvah could lead to destruction, and you should do it for life. And that's inappropriate to say, because mitzvahs can't lead to destruction. Mitzvahs are only good. Mitzvahs only lead us to good. So if it's not your minhag to say l'chaim, you dafka should not say l'chaim, because there's reason to say saying l'chaim at Kiddush is actually inappropriate to do. If it's your minhag to say it, then you should do it, because that's your minhag. And there is a source for it as well. But certainly, if it's not your minhag to say l'chaim, you should avoid it, because you don't want to imply that mitzvahs could bring to mavis. That's not correct, and you don't want to say that. So that's interesting. I remember there was one year at camp where the boys got into saying l'chaim, and I said, you shouldn't say l'chaim. You know, it's not their minhag, they shouldn't be doing it. Maybe a Sephardi boy here and there should do it, but not the entire camp should go l'chaim. As fun as it is to say, I didn't think it was the right thing to do, because you don't want to imply mitzvahs l'misa, chas v'shalom. Mitzvahs are only l'chaim. So that's the idea of l'chaim. So moving along, so we discussed a lot about Kiddush on Friday night. What about Kiddush on Shabbos day? So Kiddush Shabbos day is very different than Friday night Kiddush. Kiddush Shabbos day is certainly only mitzvah derabbanan. We mentioned Friday night Kiddush is deraisa. Mitzvah Shabbos day is derabbanan. The Rabbanan bring a source for it from a pasuk. This is called an asmachta. Asmachta means that it's a pasuk that references, that kind of serves as a hint or a reference to a Rabbanan, but it's not the source of it. Because it's a pasuk in the Torah, and this is a rabbinic mitzvah. So we say, Zachoras Yom HaShabbos. So the Gemara says, well, Yom HaShabbos means the day of Shabbos, daytime. So therefore, you should say Kiddush at daytime. But technically, that's again, it's only an asmachta, and it's only a rabbinic obligation, not a Torah obligation. Your basic obligation Shabbos day is very simple. It's just to recite Brit Pri Guffin before your meal. That's it. One-liner, Brit Pri Guffin. This is why we mentioned last time, you can't say Kiddush on Challah on Shabbos day. Because if all Kiddush is the bracha, you're making the bracha on Challah anyways. So what do you do extra before your meal to give it that chashivas, to give it that significance? So on Shabbos day, you should make Kiddush on wine or grape juice. If you don't have that, then you can use what we said last week, Har Medina, the beverage of the land, whether it be beer, whether it be a coffee, and make a shahakol. But bread cannot be used Shabbos day because you're not adding anything in. You're not doing anything different than you would anyways. So you have to. So the idea of Kiddush Shabbos day is just to make the meal special by making a bracha prior to the meal, preferably on wine, or at least on a significant drink. So Brit Pri Guffin is your basic minhag. If you say those words, you are yotze. Everything we say before Brit Pri Guffin, is based on minhag, and it's certainly not ma'akev. So if you were to walk in the Kiddush late, for instance, and all you heard was Baruch Atah Hashem Kim Hachem Repri Gaf, and you're Yotze, even though you missed Zachor or Shamru or whatever they say beforehand, that doesn't matter. The Mishnah Berurah says that there are different minhagim of what to say prior to Repri Gafin. That's based on minhag. So Mishnah Berurah says that some people say Zachor Sima Shabbos L'Kadsho, and some say V'Shamru Bein Sosa Shabbos. Different ways you can go. Some people say both paragraphs. Some throw in also Im Tov Yishev Shabbos Raglecha from Yeshaya, and they say three paragraphs. You know, if you look in your Siddurim or your benchers, you see lots of different variations of Kiddush Shabbos Day. So everyone should take their minhag and do it. But all the paragraphs before, you know, are not essential. They're minhagim, and the essential Kiddush is Brei Pri Hagafen. Now, there's one interesting catch to this, which is that there is a minhag out there. Again, I don't know what everyone's minhag is in this room, but there's a minhag out there just to say the one line, Al-Kain, Beruch Hashem Asa Shabbos Vayikadshehu. Right, just the Al-Kain line. Anybody have that minhag? No, so everyone else has different things in their families. But so some people have the minhag, they just begin with the words Al-Kain. Now that minhag is looked at, is questionable. The Mishnah Berurah doesn't like this, because there's a general rule which applies in many places, which is that it's the way that's said in the Gemara is Kol Psuki Lo Pasuk Moshe Rabbeinu Anan Lo Paskinan. Any pasuk that Moshe didn't chop, we don't chop it. I mean, you don't say half psukim. Psukim should be said in full. So the pasuk Al Kain is the middle of a pasuk. You know, the pasuk says, I don't have it in front of me. Take a venture. Mm-hmm.
This is a venture? Yeah.
So the pasuk says, I'll do you a favor. That's funny. Next Shabbos you'll be able to use it. yes, this venture has all three paragraphs before in Imtashiv, Vishamru, and Zachor. But the pasuk says, Kishesh Yamim Masah, Shemas Shemaim Masaretz. So the full pasuk is a long pasuk, and it makes sense. It says, for 6 days Hashem made the Shemaim and the Aretz, the ocean and everything in it, and he rested on the seventh day. Al-Kain, therefore, Hashem blessed Shabbos and sanctified it. But the words Al-Kain are just the very end of the pasuk. So Mishnah Berurah says, if that's your minhag, we have a problem. Because we don't slice psukim up. If the pasuk was said in full, you could say it in full. If not, don't say it, but don't jump in the middle. That's not appropriate. If Moshe didn't say it that way, you shouldn't say it that way. So that's one problem. The other problem with this minhag is that it doesn't even make sense. I can't start a sentence, therefore, if there's nothing said beforehand. If I sat down to begin the shir and I said, therefore, you'd be like, what's he talking about? Right? So there has to be something that's leading up to the therefore. So if I begin Kiddush, Al Kain Beruch Hashem Sima Shabbos Vayikadshehu, it doesn't make any sense. Therefore what? What do you mean therefore? That has to be something leading up to therefore. It doesn't make sense in the speech, in the little grammar. So we have two problems with this minhag. Why would you start it with Al Kain, and why are you breaking the pasuk up? So there is a way to explain this in terms of breaking up the pasuk. There, even though you're not supposed to break up psukim, there is an idea that's only if you're doing it to learn the pasuk. If you're saying the pasuk just as, let's say, right here it's being used as an introduction to Kiddush, it's being used to kind of like frame the moment, it's not here to learn, you're not learning Torah right now. You're not picking up your chumash and jumping in the middle of a pasuk. What you're doing is you're trying to kind of give Kiddush a framework. So it could be if you're just doing that, it's just meant to be what's called tzachas halashin. You're just trying to give a clear, you know, description of something. So then you could break a pasuk up. So some say that breaking it up is not an issue based on that, because you're not doing it to learn, you're doing it just to present, to introduce, to frame, and that's okay. However, the idea of jumping in the middle of the pasuk is still strange, because it still doesn't make all that much sense to jump in with the words therefore. So anyways, if it's your minhag, then we stick to it usually. We don't drop minhagim, like as we've said many times before. But if someone has no minhag, or you want to take on a minhag like this, there are issues with this one, because it just doesn't quite fit in terms of the language. Again, so I'm aware of at least, you know, five minhag gim of Kiddush. Some say all three paragraphs, some say two, some say Vishamru, some say Zachor, and some just say Al Kain. Some just say Bir Pirei Gofen, and not everyone even says a paragraph beforehand. But no, whatever you do, this, it's important to know the Ikar Kiddush is just Bir Pirei Gofen, and if you heard Baruch Ata Hashem, you have to hear the Baruch Ata Hashem part. If you heard that one line of the Bracha, you have done your mitzvah. So that's Kiddush Shabbos Day. Now we spoke about...
I'll put that one in.
Okay, fine.
That's fine. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. We spoke about last time the position to say Kiddush on Friday night. Do you stand? Do you sit? So what about Shabbos Day? So if we recall from last week, there were two reasons we gave for possibly standing Friday night. One reason is because the Parsha Vayechulu is considered a testimony on Hashem's creation of the world. And in a Bezdin, you stand up, we say testimony. So we'd stand up because of that. The other reason given was because the first four words of that paragraph, Yom HaShishi V'chul HaShemayim, the first four letters are Hashem's name. And the Ramah says you go up a little bit to honor Hashem's name. So neither of those reasons apply on Shabbos Day. On Shabbos Day, you're not giving any testimony, and you don't have this reference to Hashem's name. So therefore, that should dictate that Shabbos Day, there's no reason to stand, you should sit. The sitting is more considered the place of the Suda. Sitting is always recommended when you're being motzi others in a bracha, so you should sit. Yom Tov as well. On Yom Tov, even at night, there's not really any rationale for standing based on this, because again, you're not giving any testimony in Yom Tov, there's no Vayechulu. The reference to Hashem's name is not there. So Yom Tov also, the minhag seems to be that you should sit. Again, if your minhag is to stand, you should stick with it, because there are minhagim like that. But in terms of the logic behind it, the logic doesn't apply on Yom Tov or on Shabbos Day. So it's just an interesting way, even though people do the minhag to stand, which is fine, if it's your minhag, you stick with it. But the rationale for standing doesn't seem to apply Shabbos Day or on Yom Tov.
Excuse me one second. Some people stand and sit. I mean, like they stand for a while and then they sit down.
Yeah.
Part of it.
For Friday night.
I think it was during the day, maybe.
Yeah. During the day?
No. Was at someone's house and they're doing it partially where they're standing?
Right, so Friday night, because you'll stand up for Vayechulu, because you're giving testimony, then sit down for the rest of it. So that's a minhag. Right. But it's always, the only reason to stand really comes from Vayechulu. The rest of it doesn't really have a good reason to stand for. Mm-hmm. Again, whatever your minhag is in your family, you can always stick to that. But in terms of the logic behind it, it's hard to find logic to stand on Shabbos Day or on Yom Tov. The Shabbos Day Kiddush is referred to in the Gemara with the words Kiddusha Rabba. It's called Kiddusha Rabba, which is translated as the Great Kiddush. You know, the Great Kiddush, the Major Kiddush. And it's a funny thing why it's called that. I mean, if I asked any of us in the room, we'd think the Kiddush Friday night is the more important Kiddush. That Kiddush is Deraisa. This Kiddush is Derabbanin. So why is the Gemara referred to this as the Great Kiddush, Kiddusha Rabba? Why is that the reference made to Kiddush on Shabbos Day? So Rashi says, and it's kind of, you know, the logic comes, it seems a little bit backwards, but Rashi says that it's because since the Shabbos Day Kiddush is just really a one-liner, Bir Pirei Gofen, and Bir Pirei Gofen is a bracha that we say in so many occasions and in all Kiddushes, so even though it's a smaller Kiddush, this is the Great Kiddush, because the line said here really applies everywhere. So you're saying a line in Kiddush, which really applies across the board in so many places in Jewish life. So this is the Great Kiddush, because the bracha Friday night is a one-time bracha. You make only Friday night. Bir Pirei Gofen you make all the time. So that's how Rashi explains it. So that's Kiddusha Rabba. Other Rishonim say that's actually what we call Lashon Sagi Nahor. It's a euphemism. Lashon Sagi Nahor, if you don't know the phrase, it's the phrase the Gemara uses, which means it calls somebody who's blind Sagi Nahor. Sagi Nahor means he has sufficient light. So it's a euphemism that, you know, even though he really can't see any light, we say the guy has enough light. That's how we refer to a blind person. So the Mishnah Berurah says, he quotes from others, that we call Shabbos Day Kiddush the Great Kiddush as a euphemism, because since it's so small and it's less significant than the Kiddush on Friday night, we want to give it like a very, very honorable title. So we call it the Great Kiddush to make sure that we don't disgrace it in any way. So even though it's a one-liner and it's derabanan and it's not as important as the Friday night Kiddush, it gets a very special title, Kiddusha Rabba, the Great Kiddush. And this actually plays into an idea you find very often in many places, which is that derabanans, people have the tendency to kind of like push aside. Yeah, it's only derabanan, what's the big deal? And you kind of like, you know, you don't give it the same significance as Torah mitzvos. So the Gemara at times says, "Asu Rabbanan Chizuk Divrehim." The Rabbanan actually were extra stringent on their words, so that nobody disgraces a Derabbanan. So people might say, "The Shabbos day Kiddush, what's the big deal? It's only rabbinic, it's just pretty pre-guffin, I don't have to be so careful with it. You know, if I don't make Kiddush, I'll make Kiddush later." And, you know, people might treat it within a very, very, like, you know, disgraceful or light fashion. So therefore, the rabbi said, "No, we're going to call this one Kiddusha Rabbah. This is the great Kiddush to be sure everyone takes it seriously." So that's another reason to call it the great Kiddush. It also is a reference to the fact, to a halacha, which many of us also aren't aware of. The Gemara discusses, and it's quoted in halacha, that if you were to ask, let's say you can only have, let's say you're limited in what food you could have, and you can choose to serve the nice food Friday night or Shabbos day. So most of us are used to making like a really nice big Friday night meal, and Shabbos day is not quite the same. It happens to be halachically, Shabbos day is more significant in terms of the meal. And if you're going to have a limited meal, you should limit your Friday night meal and have a big meal Shabbos day. Baruch Hashem, most of us can afford to have nice meals Friday night and Shabbos day, so it's not really an issue. But in halacha, if you were to weigh the two meals, the Shabbos day meal is actually more significant than the Friday night meal. So therefore, Kiddusha Rabbah, we say the Shabbos day Kiddush is the great Kiddush. It emphasizes the point that that meal should be the great meal. And the meal of Shabbos day should actually be a more luxurious, deluxe meal than the Friday night meal. So again, we're not quite used to that all the time, and not all of us are so careful with that. But in halacha, technically that should be the nicer meal. So this is all the idea of Kiddusha Rabbah. So we have, as we mentioned, four reasons why Shabbos Day Kiddush is called the Great Kiddush. So that's everything about Kiddush. I want to talk now about Lechem Mishnah, now the idea of having two loaves of bread. So we know on Shabbos and Yom Tov we have to have two loaves of bread, Lechem Mishnah. The source for Lechem Mishnah we're aware of comes from the Man. Hashem gave them a double portion of man on Friday and to collect it on Shabbos. So to recognize the fact we had double man on Friday, we have two breads on Shabbos. So that's the idea of Lechem Mishnah. Very interesting thing, as an aside, the Ber Halacha, again, that's one of the Chofetz Chaim's perushim on Mishnah Berurah, but he says, the Chofetz Chaim is saying this, he says that, I don't understand, if Lechem Mishnah is supposed to be a symbol of double bread on Friday, then what's happened on Friday? Like, I don't understand. We're trying to mark what happened on Friday by having two breads on Shabbos. That doesn't make any sense. We should have two breads on Friday. That's every week when we have a Friday meal, meaning like Friday lunch or something, or breakfast on Friday morning, we'll take out two breads to mark the mon coming down double on Friday. How does the fact that you're having double bread on Shabbos, why does that make us remember the double bread happened on Friday? It doesn't make sense. So he actually says that it could be that the idea of Lechem Mishnah, it's not to mark the double bread on Friday. Double bread in the Midbar on Friday. What it's meant to mark is that there is, Shabbos we know is considered an Ein Olam Haba. And therefore on Shabbos we're kind of doing things that symbolize the life in Olam Haba. And there's a concept that in Olam Haba we'll once again be able to eat the man. So therefore we're remembering on Shabbos the man, not the man of the Midbar, but the man of Olam Haba. So it's a little bit different than we usually picture this idea of Lechem Mishnah. Again, the simple meaning is the man that was given on Friday in the Midbar, but there is another layer of meaning to this just because, or else we should do it on Friday. So that's an interesting thing. But there is a halacha that on Shabbos meals you have two loaves of bread. This applies to all three meals. At Shalosh Shudis, there is a little room for kula. We'll talk about that when we get to Shalosh Shudis, but technically Mikra Din, Shalosh Shudis also requires two loaves of bread. There's not really a good excuse in Shalosh Shudis if you have two loaves not to do Lechem Mishnah. The Shulchan Aruch says that at the Shabbos meal you should make hamotzi on two complete loaves of bread, like yikaro shlemos. So we'll see what it means to be complete. They should be complete. We mentioned the Medrash a few weeks ago that spoke about on Shabbos everything comes in doubles. Zachar v'shamar, that's the reason for two candles. There is two karbanos. We have two breads. So the idea of two is very much a Shabbos idea. Dasa Kini Bala Tosfos in the Chumash, he actually says the way the man worked, it wasn't that the man fell just like double the amount on Friday. He says that, the way I understand it, is that on Friday you had six portions of man fall, because you had two for each meal that fell down on Friday. So therefore it wasn't just like I have lots of man, but it actually came down in the right portions for six meals. And on Shabbos, we need to have six servings of man, because we need extra servings of man because on Shabbos we have the Neshama Yaseira. And the Neshama Yaseira, one idea of the Neshama Yaseira is that it helps you eat more, which is always a funny thing to think about. But Rashi tells us, Rashi says that the Neshama Yaseira is that you eat more on Shabbos and you don't feel like, you know, you don't feel like totally repulsed by the food. We all know what it's like to eat on Shabbos. We end up eating more than we need to, but somehow we stuff in more food on Shabbos than the rest of the week. And that's due to the Neshama Yaseira, Rashi says. The Neshama Yaseira allows you to stuff in more food on Shabbos. Mm-hmm. So on Shabbos they were given extra man because they ate more on Shabbos based on the fact they had the Neshama Yaseira. So this is something mentioned by the Adas HaKinim about the Ba'al Tosfos. So one thing which we are always kind of like confused by is, what does it mean that your bread is a shalim? We always try to have two complete loaves of bread on Shabbos. But what defines it as being shalim? I mean, you always have, you know, you take it out of the foil and a little piece comes off, you're like, what should I do? Or like you pick it up and a little crumb falls off the end. Or whatever. You know, there's so many scenarios we have where we feel like, oh, this is not complete, even though it's just missing a little bit. So what defines a complete loaf of bread? So the way we view this, there's a few different understandings. Rosh Shlomo Zalman says that little crumbs that fall off are not an issue. So you pick up your bread, and a few crumbs fall off the bottom or the side, that's for sure not an issue. If a bread has in it, let's say, some sort of crack or some sort of split, so the test is you pick it up, and on one side, will it break off on the other side? So that might also be dependent upon how well baked the challah is, if it's a little more raw, a little more cooked, but that tests a crack. But the biggest clue we have, which sometimes we rely upon, is that Rav Nissen Karelitz, and this is actually quoted in earlier sources, the Machzeh Shekel and the like, he says that as long as you don't lose more than 1/48 of your challah, that's still called a shalim. So you can have a little piece fall off, but as long as it's not up to the shear of 1/48, then you're still okay. Now, why is that the number? So this is also something I'm not so familiar with. In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, we don't do this nowadays in Chutz La'aretz, for when we take challah, so we're mafresh challah, we take off, we try to get kazayas, we get a little ball of challah, take it off. The actual amount given in halacha in Eretz Yisrael when it was deraisa is that if you are making challah at home, you take off 1/24 of your bread. If you're a baker, you take off 1/48 of your bread. So there's a source brought down that a baker will take off 1/48 and his bread's still called a complete loaf. So therefore, if you lose less than 1/48 of your bread, it's still called a complete loaf. So therefore, if it's Shabbos morning, you take out your challah and you take it off the pan or the foil and a little piece pops off of it, as long as it's not bigger than 1/48 of your loaf, you're still okay. So that's a good thing. It's hard to measure. I'm like, you know.
1/48.
Yeah.
I remember when Rabbi Einemar died at the Shiva house, and Mrs. Einemar was telling me that I think it was Rabbi Katz told her that she could make a bracha on Shal Shudas on half of the other half of her loaf by putting it down on the breadboard to seal it and to make the bracha like it was a whole loaf.
You mean she just had a half a loaf? It's interesting. I mean, there are a few tricks you can do when you need to take half. I'll talk about that in a second. But I never heard of it that way. That's interesting.
It was weird. Yeah. I mean, I never thought of that before.
Right.
But it's nice because, like, now I'm single person.
Right.
And I asked again, and he said, yeah.
Because sometimes you don't need to have like so much, right? And you have an extra loaf around, right? There are ways you can do it, and it's also important to note that the idea of being shalim, the idea of lechem mishnah, are two separate ideas. Meaning, if you don't have complete loaves, let's say you just have a loaf of sliced bread. So you stick to slices. Because even though you don't have complete loaves, you still have lechem mishnah, because it's two slices and not one. So you should always do two slices. No matter what you're doing, whether you have a complete loaf, a half a loaf, whatever, you should always do two. That's lechem mishnah. The idea of doing a shalim, that's just something which shows the kavod of the bracha. Meaning it's more honorable, it's more respectful to Shabbos than for any bracha of hamotzi to have a complete loaf. Even during the week. And during the week, if you have in front of you a full loaf and a slice, and you're interested in eating a lot of bread, you should make the bracha on the full loaf. Yeah, if you don't want to eat, you don't have to, you don't waste the bread. But let's say you have in front of you a few options, or you have a roll, make the bracha on the roll. That's more considered more covered to the bracha than make it on a roll. So the idea of being shalim is not a halacha that really pertains to lecha and mishnah in particular. That's a separate halacha. So like for instance, if you do have a half a loaf of bread and you don't want to take out a whole loaf, so you could take two halves and that's also considered lechem mishnah.
Isn't it more kafa to use the bigger challah? I mean, if you have two challahs on the table, I always thought you supposed to make the bracha on the bigger
Well, if you have a complete one and a half bigger one, you use the complete one. Right. If you have two complete ones, the bigger one's nicer, as long as you need that much challah. There's no chiyuv to waste your challah for having a shalom. Bedi Eved, let's say that you don't have a shalom. So one thing you can do, which is actually quoted in halacha, is you can take a toothpick and connect two halves. Let's say your bread fell apart, right? But you want to have a shalom. So you don't have another full bread in the house. This is the one you want to eat. You can take a toothpick, you can put it in, put them together, make it look as if it's connected. You shouldn't see the toothpick. You shouldn't see it. It should really look shalom. And that's also sufficient, bedi Eved. Mm-hmm. So that's also a trick to use, if necessary, to put it together again. Just another interesting thing which comes up. Rav Moshe Feinstein held that if one loaf is frozen and one is thawed, that's also okay for Lechem Mishnah. That comes up a lot. Like, you have one you want to eat. The other one's in the freezer. No. So you can take it out, make bracha, put it back in the freezer. That's okay to do, according to Rav Moshe. So that's another interesting halacha. But it's important just to note that shalom versus Lechem Mishnah are two separate things. We try to do both typically. But if it's not practical to have a shalom, at least use two of something. Mm-hmm. Two slices, two half loaves, two half rolls, whatever it is. So that's the idea of Lechem Mishnah. Now we know there's a minhag to cover the challah. So why we cover the challah? So there's actually three reasons quoted why we cover the challah. So I suppose everyone knows the one famous reason, I suppose. What's the famous reason?
Won't be embarrassed.
Right, that's the famous reason. Right, and then that's the one which is considered the primary reason. So the idea, the way we say it, it kind of loses sometimes what it means. So everyone quotes it that you shouldn't embarrass the challah. You're making kiddush right now. The challah is there on the table. Don't embarrass the challah. So what that really means halachically is that, in terms of the priorities of brachos, usually hamotzi comes before agafen. That's the rule. So in a normal meal during the week, if you have wine, you have bread, make hamotzi, then make agafen. On Shabbos, we flip that around, because on Shabbos, we have kiddush before the meal. So technically, you shouldn't be doing that because there's challah in front of you. So what you do is you cover the challah to show that, that that's kind of out of sight, that's, out of mind and out of sight, and not doing my challah right now, making a guffin, and then later on I'll go to my challah. That's why you do it. So we could refer to it as boshes hapas, like we're being sensitive to the bread's feelings or something. Mm-hmm. Which has something to be said, that you don't want to know something which is significant, you should never disgrace it. But the bread doesn't feel anything, it's really for us. We have to realize that in life there's priorities, and if something which is really a priority gets pushed aside, we have to at least recognize that. So we have an obligation to make kiddush first on the wine, but don't forget that the priority is really the bread. So you cover it. That's one reason given. A second reason given is a zecher to the man. When the man fell, it was covered with a layer of dew on the top and on the bottom. It's kind of like encased inside dew. I can't really picture exactly what that means, but it's encased inside dew. So therefore, there's a need to cover the chal actually on top and on the bottom. So on the bottom, we usually have, I guess, the tablecloth would suffice, and then you have on top. I suppose if you had no tablecloth, and I guess no plate or anything under it, then you should probably get something under the challah as well. Usually that's not so common for us, but I guess to put the challah right on the table and then cover it with a cover would not be enough for us. But that's a zecher to the man. So that's the second reason given. And the third reason given is called Yakra de Shabsa. It's for the honor of Shabbos. And what that means is that you want the food on the table to be clear that this food is brought for the Kavod Shabbos. So I would say it's like, you go to like a fancy meal and they go like, voila! And everything comes open and here's all the food, right? So it's also, you make Kiddush, and then now you say, here's all the Shabbos food. Because if it's all sitting there before, it's not clearly connected with, I guess, the Kiddush and with Shabbos. But if you say Kiddush first, Kiddush is declaring Shabbos as Kedusha. And then only now you say, voila, here's all the food. That's the Kavod Shabbos for the food. So that food's been brought to the Kavod Shabbos. So that's the third reason given. So we have the reason of the embarrassing the bread, or the priority of brachos. You have the reason of remembering the man. And you have the reason of the honor of Shabbos. The food should come for Shabbos' honor, not just be there already. So there's actually different differences between these reasons. There's different nafkaminas. There's different practical ramifications. So number one would be shalosh shudas. So for... before that, when to uncover it, right? So when do you uncover the challah? So if the reason is the embarrassment of the bread, well, once you made kiddush, you can uncover it. If the reason is to remember the man, then you should wait till hamotzi to uncover it. Because when you make hamotzi, that's still remembering the man. If the reason is kavod Shabbos, then I guess either time would be okay. You can uncover, but you can uncover it even before Hamotzi, because here it is, the Kavod Shabbos. So to be machmir for all three reasons, you could leave on the cover till after Hamotzi, and you've covered all three reasons. Another idea is Shalosh Shittis. At Shalosh Shittis, there's no Kiddush. So if the reason is the priority of brachos, that's not relevant at Shalosh Shittis. There's no need to cover the challah. If the idea is to remember the man, then you should keep the challah covered at Shalosh Shittis, because you're still remembering the man by having a layer on top and on the bottom. Poskim can talk about, how about a clear cover? Right, you want to cover it with just like a clear plastic cover. So is that sufficient? So the way that Poskim can describe it is that in terms of the embarrassment of the bread, it's okay, because since it's covered, even though you can see it, since it's covered, it's out of sight, and out of mind. But in terms, it's also good for the man, because it's still covered. And the man, I assume the layer of dew is actually pretty clear, so that's actually very good for the man. In terms of the honor of Shabbos, you lose that, because since it's on the table invisible, there's no like, you know, here it is, because it was already there from before. So I guess if you want to cover all your bases, it's best to not use a clear cover. I mean, it's relevant because, you know, you buy the challahs in the store and they come in those plastic bags. So you might say, it's already covered. I'll just leave it like in the plastic bag and it's already covered. So that works according to some reason, not according to all reasons. So it'd be better to take a opaque cover and put it on top of the challah. Another difference is that, must you cover all the bread on the table or just the one in front of the person making Kiddush? So if it is an issue of, let's say Zecher Laman, so seemingly I guess everything should be covered. If it's Yakar to Shabbos as well, everything should be covered. If it's about just the order of brachos, so it's only relevant to the one making Kiddush, that order of brachos, the only one by the one making Kiddush should be covered. So you also have that difference. There's also that some have the minhag to use dafka, a white cover, and that's because it says about the man, Haman Kizra, God love on him, that the man was this white seed type thing. So the man was described as white. So if you're making a zechar to the man, a white cover is appropriate. So there's lots of differences. The main reason halachically is the idea of the order of brachos, the embarrassment of the bread, as most of us were familiar with from before. So all things considered, as long as you cover that one, then you're okay. But if you want to cover all your bases, you would use a white opaque cover. You'd cover all the challahs. You would do it all three meals. You would uncover it only after Hamotzi. And then I'd cover everything. So I'm not saying you have to do that. I'm just saying if you want to cover everything, you can. Yeah.
So you say Hamotzi with it covered?
Yeah.
And uncover it during Hamotzi.
Right. So when you're done with the bracha, you can uncover it. That would cover all your bases if you did it that way. So that's the idea of the challah cover. Another curious thing that a lot of us always think about is the idea of the salt on the table, right? We know there's an idea of having salt on the table. Where does that come from? So that's also a mistake we make. What?
From the korban, now something they used to do it when the sacrifices.
Right. Yeah. Correct. That's correct. But the mistake we make is that most of us are careful on Shabbos to do that, and we don't think about it during the week. Really, it's nothing to do with Shabbos. The idea of the salt is a halacha which applies anytime you have bread, there should be salt. So I think that's the mistake that we all make, in that we're not so careful during the week. And there's reasons why. I'll explain why we're not so careful with it overall. The halacha is nothing to do with Shabbos. The idea of having salt is a halacha all week long. So where does that come from? So there is an idea quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. It says that you should not make hamotzi until they've brought salt to the table. And that was based on the fact that their bread was not all that high quality in their days. And therefore, without the salt, the bread would not taste very good. But then the Shulchan Aruch says, if your bread is clean, or if you don't want any salt, there's no obligation to have salt. So it started off as a very practical concern that if the bread isn't good, you don't want to make hamotzi on bread that doesn't taste good. So you should have the salt on the table first, you should salt the bread properly, and then eat the bread. But if your bread is fine without the salt, your bread's already spiced up and salted, or your bread you don't want any salt because you know you're watching your diet and salt's not good for you, so you don't need to have the salt. That's the Shulchan Aruch. Then the Ramah says, Mikol Makom. Nevertheless, there's a mitzvah to bring salt to the table before you make hamotzi. No matter, even if your bread is good. So nowadays, even though our bread may not require salt, we already salted it when we made it, and the bread tastes delicious without the salt. You should still have salt on the table for a motzi. And the reason for that is, like we said before, because the shulchan, our table, it looks like as a mizbeach, it's like the mizbeach in the Beis Hamikdash, and our eating is like a karban, and there's a lacha by karbanos, I'll call karban chatakriv melach, that every karban requires salt. So the Ramah brings in a new dimension to our meals. This is not Shabbos, this is all the time. We always look at our table as a mizbeach, we view our food as a karban, and karbanos require salt, therefore we should always have salt at our meals. So that's what the Ramah says. Interestingly enough, the Kaf HaChaim says that the minig is that the women should bring out the salt, because we know that Lot's wife turned into a pillar of salt because she did not use the salt properly. She was supposed to share salt with neighbors and didn't share the salt, and therefore as a tikkun for Lot's wife, we have women bring out the salt. So that's the Kaf HaChaim says. I'm not sure why we're concerned with Lot's wife exactly, but I guess she was a woman and she messed up with salt and became salt, so our women should be careful with salt. So we like the women to bring out the salt, according to the Kaf HaChaim.
Do they use the salt or just have it on the table?
So I'll talk about that also. Technically, you don't need to use the salt. I'll say that. Technically, they just have the salt. Right? The salt should be here. And we'll discuss why. There is a minhag al-pi kabbalah to dip into the salt three times. But the ikar halacha would be just to have the salt present. And I'm going to discuss why that is. But let's go back to this point. So the Ramah tells us that the table is like a mizbeach, and eating is like a karban. So the Mishnah Berurah explains a little bit of what this means. So why is our table like a mizbeach? Why is it eating like a karban? So the Mishnah Berurah says, he quotes from a Gemara. Gemara tells us, in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, the mizbeach atoned for people. Now our table atones for us. So how do we understand that? So the Mishnah Berurah says, what does it mean our table atones for us? It means that we share our food with aniyim. So our atonement comes through the tzedakah given from the food at our table. So that's the way Mishnah Berurah describes it. However, there's more described as well. The Shaar Tzion says that also the way you conduct yourself at your table, if you share a divrei Torah at your table, if you say praises to Hashem at your table, if you say some sort of tehillim or mizmor at your table, that also takes the table and makes it a kapara for ourselves. The idea being that, what is a karban? A karban was taking a very, very physical item, an animal, and elevating it to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So we have an opportunity. We sit at a table to eat. That's a very physical action. If we can take that action and elevate it in some way, so now we've taken our food and made it like a karban, because we've taken the physical and made it spiritual. So whether you take your food and give it to tzedakah, whether you take your meal and share divrei Torah, whether you use your meal and you praise Hashem, you know, through some tehillim or through something at the meal, so that now elevates the entire meal to be the physical is now becoming spiritual. So that's the idea of the shulchan becoming like a mizbeach. And then the eating is like a karban. So Mishnah Berurah says, because when you eat, you're strengthening yourself, and through that, you'll be healthy and strong to serve Hashem. So, what's the idea? So, a karban is where you take...
Okay. That's
really bad. Okay. She had an inhaler before. It was okay.
I had a second candle.
It's okay,
bad.
Yeah.
Let
me sure you're okay.
What's up, Ms.
Make sure you're okay.
That's this child with these leaves.
She's boring.
Thank you.
Okay.
Sorry.
It's okay. Just make sure you're okay.
Sorry.
Make sure, yeah. You make sure that you're feeling good. So when we eat at the table, it's like a karban, because when you eat, you're giving yourself strength. And just like a karban went to Hashem, So when you eat food and you're serving Hashem, that food's going to Hashem as well. So if I take some food and now I'm able to go out and daven, do chesed, help others, help my family, so that food's now become a korban because I've taken that physical food and I've brought it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The same way if I take a lamb and I shecht and runs bech, the lamb's gone to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the same idea. So it's the same concept that eating your food is like giving a korban. So that being said, when you sit down at a meal and your table is the mizbeach and your food's a korban, so every korban required salt. That was because there's bris melech. It says a kol korban chatakriv melech. Every single korban requires salt on top of it. So we try to mimic that in our meals by having salt there. Now, do you have to actually eat the salt? We said no. If your bread's not good, you should put salt on it. That's okay. If your bread is good, then as long as the salt's on the table, you've done this minhag. There is a IDLP Kabbalah to dafka dip the bread in salt 3 times. Not to sprinkle it on, but dip it 3 times. So that's IDLP Kabbalah. And then it's said you should leave the salt on the table until after you bench. So you shouldn't take it off. As you clean the table before benching, don't take off the salt. Leave the salt there until after benching. That's all IDLP Kabbalah. So just quickly, you know, what's so special about salt anyways? Like, what's the idea of salt on karbanos? This is like going a little off topic for a second. But the fact that we're trying to have salt on table mirrors the karban. Why do we put salt on karbanos? So Sefer HaChinuch says very simply, he says that it's also to add taste. If you're bringing karban to Hashem, it should be tasty. It should be pleasant to Hashem. Kaviyachol, I mean, Hashem doesn't eat a karban, but there's a pasuk that we quote from, I think the pasuk is in Malachi, I think. It says, Hakrivir no lefechasecha. It says, would you offer this to an official, to a king? I mean, anything that's not worthy of a king, we don't offer to Hashem. So you might say, wait, Hashem doesn't care. Hashem doesn't really eat it. Hashem doesn't care what the food tastes like. The answer is, yeah, but you have to give something honorable. So if you were to bring a king food and it wasn't seasoned, that would be an embarrassment to the king. So when you bring Hashem a karban, kaviyachol, you season it. You put the salt on because you want to make this worthy of being offered to the king. And we have to give Hashem what we feel is good. We give Hashem something bland, then we're not giving something that we feel is honorable. So if your table is in Mizbeach, the same concept applies. You know, we're supposed to be able to bring this as a karban to Hashem. So if I can't stand my food, if I don't like my food, then that's not a very honorable karban to Hashem. If my food is enjoyable, then and I'm using it to serve Hashem properly, then I've actually brought a pleasant karban to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Additionally, the Sefer Chinuch says, the salt is a quality of preserving, preventing against rotting. And there's an idea that karbanos bring the kiyum to the world. They cause the world to endure. Without karbanos, without our avoda, the world will not be able to carry on. So salt is a symbolic of preservation, of things continuing onwards. So therefore, the idea of salt on a karban shows that the idea of a karban is that the world should continue. So I guess as well, when we eat our food gives us a kiyum. Our food keeps us going. It gives us life. It gives us the ability to serve Hashem. And therefore, you have salt in your food to show the idea of preservation, of keeping yourself going. One other idea is from Rav Hirsch. Now, Rav Hirsch points out that salt, we know, prevents decay. So like we said before, you can pickle something, or you make like jerky, and things remain, and they don't change. So Rav Hirsch, this is very much his style. Rav Hirsch says that salt is symbolic of the unchanging nature of Torah itself. And Rav Hirsch spent his time writing against the Reform movement in Germany as they began in the 1800s. And as they wanted to change Torah, Rav Hirsch would always say, Torah is unwavering, unchanging, Torah doesn't budge. Torah is what it is, and we conform to Torah. We don't conform Torah to us. And therefore, salt shows that I can take a piece of meat, which would have molded and rotted, I can salt it, and then it remains as is. It's not going to change anymore. And it preserves it. So, but more than just the idea of preservation, it shows there's a nature of Torah in Yiddishkeit, which is unchanging, unwavering, and that's what Torah should be like. So therefore, on the karbanos, which were kind of symbolic of serving Hashem and the kiyum of the world, we have the idea of the Torah is an unchanging thing. There's one more point, which is that the very fact that your table is a mizbeach, so that means the Shaar Tzion says that there's an idea not to kill any bugs on your table. Because this table is a mizbeach, so I can't do things that are disgusting on the table. And this is the idea that we should keep our tables clean. We try. It's a very nice clean table. This is Goodman. Very, very nice and clean. But we should keep our tables clean because they're a mizbeach, so we're going to keep them honorable. There's also this idea that people shouldn't stand on a table. it's all the same concept, because the table is the mizbeach, and to stand on the table is a disgrace to the mizbeach. So there is this idea, this imperative, that in your home you should kind of keep your table in a very, very, you know, nice, pristine, honorable way, because your table represents the mizbeach and the Beis HaMikdash, and we have to be able to keep that kedusha on our tables. So that can be challenging at times, especially with little kids running around the house, but we should do our best to make sure our table does resemble a mizbeach to some degree, so we can actually feel and appreciate this inyan. So this is where salt comes in. So salt, it's not a Shabbos thing. Salt's a thing all week long. So the reason all week long people are not so careful is because our food usually is already seasoned. You know, our bread is good to eat as is, and we don't need the salt. But this idea of Kabbalah, an idea of the Shulchan, being a Mizbeach, applies all week long. And really, we should be careful to have salt at every meal, at least on the table. We don't have to use it, but at least to have it on the table to remind us that our tables are like a Mizbeach and our food's like a Karban. Okay, people, stop here for the week. So, Mitzvah, next week I'd like to do a Chanukah shir. Try to get some Chanukah. Yeah.